In This League presents the NFL Draft Prospect Podcast.
You like that? You like that?
In this war room.
Hug it, chug it, football.
Here's your host, Scott Bogman.
Hello and welcome into the war room. I'm your host, Scott Bogman. You can follow me on the Twitter at Bogman Sports. And first, I'd like to say sorry it took me so long to get back to this feed. A lot of baseball, a lot of basketball, but you guys know all my excuses and all that stuff. But today on the show, I'm going to have my friendo John McKechnie from RotoWire on to talk about some of these prospects and kind of lay down a primer for you guys at each position, quarterback, running back, wide receiver, and tight end, all of our fantasy positions. And I'm going to talk to you about the mock draft that I did. And if you guys want to check that out, you can see it on our Patreon, patreon.com/ITL Army, where I did the first 32 picks. I did a mock, no trades at all. But it was a fun one to do to kind of start to get, okay, what does each team need? And, you know, it puts you in the mindset of each team making these first round picks and knowing what they need and knowing, you know, sometimes like, hey, look, they're just not going to take a wide receiver because they have a bigger need at X position. So it's got in-depth analysis really on the article and then other options for those teams and what they need on Patreon. So you don't have to go and pick it up at Patreon, but if you did, that'd be awesome. It's available to all Patreons, even the dollar level. So check it out over there, but let's get to breaking this down and then stick around afterwards because John McKechnie is going to join me for an interview. So here we go. First pick. The first pick here up, and what I did here was I did no trades because I think trades in February, you know, are a bit ridiculous. I know mock drafts in February too are a bit ridiculous, but it gets your blood flowing. It gets your blood pumping and makes you really want to get into everything. So that's why I figured I would start this mock draft. And for the first pick, it's obviously going to the Cincinnati Bengals, and I am going to give them Joe Burrow. It's pretty easy. It's been rumored they're going to need a new quarterback because Andy Dalton isn't getting it done. I think this pick is obvious. We have heard a little bit of rumbling about the possibility of him holding out and not wanting to play for the Bengals, which, you know, as a Steelers fan, I don't know that I would doubt, I would blame him for that, but I think that's all noise and nonsense. Maybe he doesn't want to play for the Bengals and he's trying to get them to trade this pick, but I don't think it's going to happen. If they want him, they're going to stick there and they're going to take him and they're going to make him sit out a year if he doesn't really want to play for them. Number two, the Washington Redskins, another easy pick here. Chase Young, I have for them, the defensive end from Ohio State, elite edge rusher. I mean, we saw what Nick Bosa brought to the San Francisco 49ers last year. I think pairing him up with new defensive-minded coach Ron Rivera is going to be a great combo. And I just, you know, it's unfortunate that they, it's one of the positions that they don't actually have to have is an edge rusher, but you just can't pass on Chase Young. He's the best player in this draft, I think. You obviously, quarterback need goes ahead of everything else in the NFL. But after that, it's all about best player available. And if you're picking in the top five in a draft, you normally have enough needs to need to take the best overall player. And the Redskins definitely do. So Chase Young, I gave them. Detroit was the hardest one because we hear all of the rumors about Tua, them potentially wanting Tua, but there's so much smoke screens and nonsense going on here. I gave them Jeff Okuda. I think Jeff Okuda is one of the best defensive backs we've seen in a while coming out of Ohio State. I think that the Lions have had problems. In fact, my Lions friend Couch used to be my roommate. He's from Detroit. He's a huge Lions fan. He has nonstop complained about the defensive backs for the Lions, and it's something that if they can get a shutdown corner, I think they need to do it. And I think Matt Stafford is fine, so I don't think they'll trade for Tua. They could, or draft Tua, they could trade out of this spot with Miami or with another team that wants Tua and acquire picks, and that is probably the best move for them. But I think the news today as we're recording this is that they are not going to re-up Snacks, or no, I think they cut Snacks is what happened. So Damian Harrison gone, Derek Brown, a really, really good defensive tackle, is on the board for them if they wanted to replace him to try to stop the run. The fourth pick in the draft is going to the New York Giants. I'm going to give them Tristan Wirfs, the tackle from Iowa. Now, look, I haven't separated my tackles yet. So I haven't gone through and looked between Wills and Brown and Wirfs and Becton to see which one I like the most. All I know is I was listening to Daniel Jeremiah's pod. He has some insight on the Giants. He said the Giants love Wirfs. Once again, he works in the media. Could be a smokescreen. But Gettleman makes a pick that's surprising to most people. And I think a lot of people have Wills as the number one tackle here. It's kind of all over the board, to be honest with you. But I think that he should probably be the pick there if they're going to stick it for. I think if you're the Giants, smart move would probably be to move down and take more picks if you possibly can. But once again, we have no idea who might be doing that at this point in February. With the fifth pick, it's the Miami Dolphins. I gave him Tua. They've been talked about wanting Tua, tanking for Tua, all that stuff for the last couple years. So I just think that if he's available for them at five, or if they trade up and take him at three, and then the Lions are here and they can take Jeff Okuda here, if the Giants decide to go, you know, stick with offensive line, I think that that's the way they're going to go. I think they need a quarterback. You know, Fitzpatrick was nice last year. They say they're going to stick with Rosen too, but it's on record. We know that they love Tua. I think all the Herbert stuff that has been talked about now is a smokescreen in case the Lions do take Tua at three, so they can say that they like Herbert, so that they can get something from the Chargers, who pick at six, to get them to move up one spot if Tua isn't there. And with the six pick, the Chargers, for me, are going to take Justin Herbert in this draft as well. Phillip Rivers is gone. I think Tyrod Taylor will be the transition quarterback there for a year, but you got to get a franchise QB when you're going into a new building. You're trying to build a fan base here. I kind of think that they did Phillip Rivers dirty, but I also think that, it's a business. And at the end of the day, you got to go with your gut. And if your gut says Justin Herbert, you got to take him. With the seventh pick for the Browns, I'm giving them Derrick Brown in this mock. I think he's the best player on the board. I think he would help. They got problems up the middle. You know, Isaiah Simmons, I had a really tough time between Isaiah Simmons and Derrick Brown here, because they definitely need a middle linebacker after Kuechly retired. But I think with Kawan Short coming back, playing next to Derrick Brown, that could go from a weakness to a strength for them, the defensive line. So I think that that is a pretty damn good selection for the Panthers and first-year head coach Matt Rhule. The Cardinals, this one was tough. And, of course, I put this out on Monday, and then today, Thursday, as I'm recording this, we hear Kyler Murray kind of campaigning for CeeDee Lamb. I gave them Jerry Jeudy. I think it's going to be one of those two guys. And there's about five or six guys that they can take here. I mean, I think it'd be smart for them to get some help on defense. I think taking an offensive lineman would help them a lot as well, to keep Kyler Murray safe. But they need targets for Kyler, and I think that's kind of what you're going to see this team build upon is, you know, they'll deal with the offensive line problems, especially because Murray is elusive and mobile. So I feel like they would go wide receiver here. Between Jeudy and Lamb, to me, is a coin flip. I don't know who they like more. I like Jeudy more, so I made him the first wideout off the board. The Jaguars, this one is easy and simple and would probably be a dream pick. It's Isaiah Simmons. They need a middle linebacker. Miles Jack wasn't good. Leon Jacobs was bad. They tried Donald Payne and Quincy Williams and Preston Brown, and nobody worked. So I think Isaiah Simmons would be a great pick here. They could use some wide receiver help, but there's a lot of good wide receivers in this class. So I think here you take BPA, and then you can take a wide out later on in the draft. At pick 10, I've got Jedrick Wills from Alabama going to Cleveland. I think this is a decent pick here because they need some help on the offensive line, especially when what could have been your starting left tackle and who was last year, just got stopped with 157 pounds of pot at the border and is probably going to the clink for a couple years. So, you know, whoever they have in mind here for Cleveland would be good. Just give Baker Mayfield an extra Mississippi. You know what I mean? You give him one more Mississippi when you have guys like Jarvis Landry, who we just found out is having hip surgery, but they expect him to be back at the beginning of camp and all that stuff, so he should be back by then. But you give them another Mississippi with these weapons, and I think that Baker Mayfield could really improve. Give him a coach that he likes. Get him a little bit of extra time, and he's really going to start making defenses pay. So I like this move a lot for the Browns. It's going to be an offensive lineman, I think, regardless of who it is. Same thing for the Jets. I gave them Mekhi Becton from Louisville. They have a lot of issues, but they can't trade Bell, and he is their best weapon, so they need to get him some blockers. I know he's patient, and he can make his own holes and find his own way and all that stuff, but you got to give him just a little bit of breathing space. I think this is a smart move with Sam Darnold being a young guy. Like I said with Mayfield, they were in the same class. Give him an extra Mississippi. You know, the weapons aren't for the Jets what they are in Cleveland, of course, but you can add pieces later because the wide receivers are so deep. So take your tackle here, get a wide receiver later. For the Las Vegas Raiders, that's right, get used to it. It's going to be LVR on all of those sheets and all those breakdowns now. No more Oak, LVR now. I gave them CeeDee Lamb. Now, I know a lot of you are probably going to laugh at this pick because fast wide receiver seems like the ultimate first-round Raiders pick, but it's finally, I think, a good pick. Now, regardless of who's throwing him the ball, whether it's Brady or you know, it's Carr or whoever it is throwing the ball to him, I think they need a guy to take the top off the defense, to give Josh Jacobs a little bit more running room, give Darren Waller open in the middle, Renfro a little bit, take a safety away from him when he's running a crossing route. I think this is a really smart pick. I think CeeDee Lamb fits in perfectly here. And, I mean, CeeDee Lamb would fit in perfectly anywhere, but I think he makes this team better, a lot better, especially on offense. As just a single pick. And I think Judy could do the same thing. I mean, Judy said he expects to run in the 4-3s. I don't know if I buy that, but if he does, he would come in and do the same thing, stretch the defense, take those defenders back a step or two and make some easier completions for Carr. Moving on to pick 13, it's the Colts. I had a hard time here. A lot of people are plugging Jordan Love in here. I just don't think that I can do that yet. You know, Jordan Love, a lot of people want to compare to Patrick Mahomes. Jacoby Brissett seems like he's probably not going to be it for them. And I understand that, but I think I would give... They had a lot of wide receiver issues last year. They need another wideout. T.Y. Hilton was banged up, and even when he was playing, he was not at 100% for most of the year. So I'm going to give them Henry Ruggs, a wide receiver out of Bama. I know my guy Will Hall loves this pick, being a Bama alumnus, but I think that Ruggs, not only does he do all the stuff that CeeDee Lamb would do for the Raiders, kind of the same deal, but they need some explosion. Marlon Mack is not explosive. T.Y. Hilton's on the way out, you know, as far as his NFL career goes. The tight ends are great, but they're not going to make gigantic plays downfield like Ruggs can. You can throw screens to Ruggs. He is so damn fast. He is greased lightning. So he will make some huge, huge big plays for them, and that is exactly what they need. The Bucks, another pick I struggled with because you can go so many ways here. I gave them Clavion Chaisson, the edge rusher from LSU. Hard to whittle it down to one choice is what I said in my article here, but you could give them a lineman too. I mean, Andrew Thomas fits here as well, but I think with JPP being a free agent, Sue Barrett, all free agents, Nassib a free agent, they're going to need to replace at least one of those guys in the draft. And I think Chaisson is a great pick here for them. We saw him be super, super disruptive in the national title game. And, you know, I don't think he's a immediate impact guy from snap one if they don't put some stuff around him. But if they get a nice, maybe they re-sign Sue, get a nice anchor in the middle, get him some, the one-on-one matchups that he needs. And he's perfect, you know, as far as stats go for your IDPers, if he should be playing for the Bucks, because the Bucks, you know, if Winston is going to get this, you know, he had the LASIK surgery, if he cuts the turnovers in half, they're going to be winning a bunch of games. A lot of teams are going to be passing to catch up, and he is going to get his opportunities to disrupt the passing game. So I like this pick. I think it fits. The Broncos. Broncos was another tough one here because Chris Harris is gone. They could definitely use a corner, but I think they want a wide out next to Cortland Sutton. And if you're going to go with Drew Lock, let's give him all the help that he could possibly get, right? So let's give him Laviska Shenault, the wide receiver from Colorado. My guy Dusty in the group me rooms looking over the mock, he said, hey, look, Colorado's always been good to the Broncos. You know, obviously Philip Lindsay pretty strong there too. But now if you add Laviska Shenault, who is a great wide receiver, you put him in there with Cortland Sutton and now a second year of Noah Fant, you become dangerous. Even with Drew Lock as your quarterback, I don't know that he's going to make it or if he's going to last. But, you know, this is also, I don't think that Rivers would sign with the Broncos just out of respect for the Chargers. But the way they did him dirty, maybe if the Broncos are looking for someone and he can't find a spot, he would wind up there and he would make all of these targets extremely fun to watch. Going on to pick 16 midway through this first round is the Atlanta Falcons. This was an easy pick. A.J. Epinesa. They got to get to the quarterback. They're 31st in sacks with 28. Only the Dolphins had fewer. Their pressure numbers were garbage. I know that they could use some help on the back end, too, and Christian Fulton's available. They could use another running back, and I didn't. A spoiler alert, no running backs in the first round here for me. So DeAndre Swift might be a decent pick here, too, but I think Epinesa falling halfway down the line here. If you watch him at Iowa, he was dominant. He can kind of, he's a jack of all trades. He can kind of do whatever you want him to do in this defense, and they just have to get pressure on the quarterback. So easy pick to make. The Cowboys pick here at 117 was one of the harder ones because I really wanted to give them Xavier McKinney, from the safety from Alabama. But I think that Javon Kinlaw, the defensive lineman from South Carolina, just has some absolutely dominant film, by the way. If you want to go watch someone who is going to take up two blockers on every play, I think Kinlaw could definitely do that. And Collins and Covington were the Cowboys snap leaders at defensive tackle, and they're both UFAs. So they're going to have to replace probably at least one of those guys with a pick in the draft. So I think that Kinlaw goes here to the Cowboys. And, you know, when you pay DeMarcus Lawrence so much money, put something in the middle to take up some blockers so he can do his thing. Then at 118, this is the Dolphins pick. I gave them Andrew Thomas, the tackle from Georgia. This is the best player available on the board. I would like to give them Xavier McKinney or Grant Delpit a safety because they do need that after trading Minkah Fitzpatrick. But if you're going to take a guy who just is coming off a hip surgery like Tua, he's had ankle issues as well, get a pass blocker for him so he is not getting rocked back there. So I think that this just makes too much sense. They have good targets already. They could use a running back for sure, but there's other guys that they can take in this draft. Get that offensive line shored up and get some protection for their new quarterback in Tua, should that be the way it goes. The Raiders have another pick here from the Bears in this Khalil Mack deal. I think both sides of the ball, they need speed. I'm going to give him Patrick Queen, the middle linebacker from LSU. He is going to add a ton of speed. They tried to do this with Vontaze Burfict last year, who eventually just got booted out of the NFL. The middle linebackers are slow. Tahir Whitehead gets tackles and stuff for UIDPers, but they're always downfield. I think it's time they added some speed. I think he can be a vocal leader as well. And we heard Mayock talking about last year, I want leadership. We got to change the whole function of this team. That's why I drafted Farrell over some guys that were probably, you know, maybe more talented or maybe just as talented, but he wanted Farrell for the leadership. Smart move. So I think this is another move in that direction and gives them a lot of speed on defense. The Jaguars pick, I gave them Christian Fulton. They traded Ramsey, and I actually hate the thought of replacing a star player with another player at that position. Like last year, I thought it'd be really dumb if the Giants took DK Metcalf where the pick that they got for Odell Beckham Jr. I thought that would have been dumb, right? Because now you're going to have everyone comparing him his whole career to OBJ. So that didn't happen. This is one of those cases where it fits the need. Christian Fulton's the best player available. They need to shore up that defense a little bit. So I think if they get Isaiah Simmons, I think this is a smart pick for them. If they don't go Simmons, it'd probably be a linebacker here. For the Eagles at 121, lots of options here. They just got rid of Nigel Bradham, you know, once again, after I recorded this. So maybe I would go with the linebacker at this spot, but they had so many issues at wideout. I could not give them a wide receiver. So I gave them T. Higgins, a wideout from Clemson. You know, there's tons of other options here, and I know they just drafted Arthega Whiteside, who's kind of like this as well. I just think T. Higgins is too good. You know, you have those two tight ends. Why don't you be dominant? Miles Sanders is awesome. You know, I think that T. Higgins would fit in here perfectly. They got, you know, a guy like Aguilar or D-Jack still there to take the top off the defense. The tight ends like Ertz and Goddard make room in the middle. Higgins is, I don't know that he's the best fit, but he's the best wide receiver available here. And I think pairing him with Alshon could teach him a thing or three. So I think it's just a smart decision and one of the best players available at the spot. For the Bills, this one I racked and racked and racked my brain because I wanted to give them a wide receiver. But I think if T. Higgins goes, it's kind of the end of a tier right there. So maybe this would be a wide receiver, but I gave them Neville Gallimore, the defensive tackle from Oklahoma. I just think you drafted Ed Oliver last year. He's a great interior pass rusher, but if you put another stud next to him, it's going to be tough for that offensive line to decide who to double on a play-in and play-out basis. So I think making a weakness into a strength for Buffalo would be really, really smart. Clog that middle and let Ed Oliver get to the quarterback a little bit more. For the Patriots have barely any needs at all, depending on what happens, of course, with Tom Brady. But I don't think there's a quarterback here that I would take for them. You know, if Brady's gone, I'm assuming they're going to sign Rivers or trade for somebody. I don't know. But I give them Yetur Gross-Matos, the defensive end edge rusher from Penn State. This isn't the biggest need. They need a tight end, but there's not a first-round tight end here. So I just think let's give him an edge rusher. And we know what Belichick does with these guys. He rotates them. He makes them come in and out and all that stuff. And Gross-Matos in a limited role, I think, to start his NFL career would be really, really smart for the Pats. For the Saints, I gave them Brandon Ayuk, a wide receiver from Arizona State, a little bit more of a field stretcher. You know, Michael Thomas obviously going to get 100-plus receptions again as long as he stays healthy. That's not really what it's about. It's just getting a target for Breeze in his last year because outside of Thomas and Kamara, they don't have many weapons in New Orleans. I mean, I like Tre'Quan Smith, but he's a wide receiver three at best. So I think just adding, you know, a slot guy and a guy that can take the top off the defense and just a good route runner. And if you have a good route runner, that dude can start day one in a Drew Brees offense. You're going to be open because you ain't going to get doubled because Michael Thomas is getting doubled. For the Vikings at 125, I gave them C.J. Henderson. Another easy-ish pick is what I said in my article here. Trey Waynes, Mackenzie Alexander, both UFAs. Let's shore that up. Let's get a corner. So C.J. Henderson, the best available in my opinion. Obviously, Jeff Gladney, pretty solid from TCU as well. So possibility there. Now, the Dolphins, you know, they took Andrew Thomas. They took Tua in my draft here. So I gave them Xavier McKinney, who slipped all the way down here and would be the first safety off the board at 26. Wouldn't be surprised to see someone jump in and trade for him at this point. But I think that Xavier McKinney would be a great pick here. I don't think he's as good as Minka. I don't think anybody would say that, but he's still damn good and the best player available. For the Seahawks at 127, I gave them Cesar Ruiz, an interior offensive lineman from Michigan. He can play all three positions, which is solid, and he started for three seasons at Michigan, and they just have to give Russell Wilson a little bit more time. The offensive line has been the issue for the Seahawks in the last couple years, and they run the ball a ton too. So I think get a road grader for Carson or whoever, and get just a little bit more time for Russell Wilson, I think, is a smart move here. At 128, I would hate to see this pick happen, but the Baltimore Ravens, I got taking Kenneth Murray, the linebacker from Oklahoma. He's really, really good, and I think after losing C.J. Mosley, they just need a little more speed on defense. The Ravens have been known for their defense forever. Right now, it's the Lamar Jackson era for them. But they need to get as good on the defense as they are on offense, and they're just not there yet. So I think Kenneth Murray would be a great pick here. For the Titans, I gave them an edge rusher at 129. I gave them Terrell Lewis from Alabama. There's a lot that they could take here. They could get, a guy like Justin Matabuk, the defensive tackle from A&M. They could go for a developmental quarterback for Jordan Love here, too. I like those options, but the Titans were 23rd in pressure percentage last year, and Lewis can come in just situationally and get to the quarterback. For the Packers here at 130, I'm going to give them Jalen Reagor, the wide receiver out of TCU. I think this is a great fit. Putting him with Aaron Rodgers is a guy that has had some terrible quarterback play at TCU. And I'm not going to sit here and tell you that he's Tyreek Hill, but he has the same type of skill set. Small dude, burner, explosive, and not given a really good shake in college. So kind of in the same spot. Probably will return kicks and punts immediately for this team and be a great, great target for some explosive plays for Aaron Rodgers. Welsh's Niners just slide into a great spot here at 131. We obviously know, because speaking of Tyreek Hill, him torching the Niners defense in the fourth quarter, they need help in the secondary. I've got them taking Grant Delpit, the safety from LSU. This would be a dream scenario. I don't think he falls this far. I mean, before the season, this guy was a top 10 pick being talked about, one of the best defensive players in the nation. And he just kind of took a step back. He dealt with some injury stuff early in the season as well. But this would be an instant upgrade. And you would think that they would probably be drafting maybe, a wideout, especially if they don't sign Emmanuel Sanders. That's definitely the way they could be. And I went back and forth, but I think if Delpit fell, it'd be almost an insta pick. And for the Super Bowl champs, the Kansas City Chiefs at 132, I gave them Jeff Gladney, the cornerback out of TCU. We saw Breshad Breeland make some plays in the Super Bowl, but he's bad. 105th ranked on PFF at corner. He's just not a good corner, and they definitely need help in the secondary, especially with teams that are going to be trying to play catch up the entire season. But that is my mock wrap up. I hope you guys enjoyed that. But to kind of come in here and give you a primer on the positions, especially for fantasy, I'm going to interview my boy John McKechnie from RotoWire. And here you go. Here it is. He's on the guest line right now. So he'll probably end up going in the first round just because he's kind of the fourth best quarterback on the board in terms of what most people's opinions are right now. So are you on this hype train, and do you think he'll go in the first? It's guest time on the NFL Draft Room. It is me, Scott Bogman. I'm with you with John McKechnie, my friendo, and you can follow him on the Twitter at Johns_tailgate. And you've changed that a couple times, Sean, and you guys know him. He's the college football editor at RotoWire. He's got a show on SiriusXM Fantasy. What's been going on with you, man?
Let's see. Been traveling around this great country of ours. I was in Iowa a couple weeks ago. I made an app. It obviously went over very well. No, that wasn't me. let's see. Went to Chicago. Went to New York City for the Westminster Dog Show. One of the, of course, most important sporting events in the sporting calendar. So it was an honor to be there. And now I'm just
you actually
back
went to the show.
I'm not even kidding, man. Like, I got photographic evidence. I was at the Garden for the dog show. It was a time. It was like best in show.
So what made you go to the dog show? Do you actually follow the dog show stuff, or was it just, hey, I'm here, why don't I go? Like, what was the process?
It was something that it's actually been in the works for a little bit. My mom's like a huge dog person, and she went to the dog show for her 50th, and then it was her 60th. Just a couple weeks back, so I figured for her 60th birthday, that would be the gift. We would go up to New York for the dog show. So it was in the works for a while, and I think that should cinch Son of the Year, but we'll see.
Oh, 100%. I mean, now you guys have, of course, watched Best in Show, correct?
Oh, huge Best in Show fans. The Eugene Levy character with the two left feet walking in loops. There are so many good quotes and little bits from that movie. Love that movie.
Him and Catherine O'Hara were on like Conan's podcast. I don't know if you've listened to Conan's podcast at all, but Eugene Levy and Catherine O'Hara were on talking a little bit about that and how they met and stuff and why they have such great chemistry because they've been working together for so long. So that's just funny that you, because I saw you commenting on Twitter, but I was like, oh, all right, this is a bit he's doing. He's just talking about the dog show. And then I had no idea you actually went. So that's pretty damn cool, man. So what was the experience like? Was it, how much was a beer at the dog show?
Oh, boy. Yeah, it's definitely New York prices. I think, let's see, it was like 14 for a tall boy of something decent, like 18 for like one of those giant, like 24-ounce silos of beer. And then I got us a whiskey each for the Best in Show round, and that ran like $45.
Oh, man. Well, that sounds like a bit much, but I'm glad you had a good time. So,
absolutely.
And I got to tell you, that's probably more fun than the combine, right? Like, and maybe you get to talk to the players at the combine and stuff, but the underwear Olympics seems a little tedious to me.
It does, and it seems like it's a very like sterile environment. Like for the dog show, you know, you can pet the contestants and it's not weird.
Can't do that to Jonathan Taylor. He might sock you in the face. So
yeah, really would not advise that. So definitely edge goes to the dog show in that regard.
All right, so let's transition to the NFL and the draft in particular here. And I've been a little late to the drawing board on getting my ranks done. I mean, I've been watching a bunch of stuff and reading stuff, but I just put my first mock draft out there, which I told you off air. I do love doing mock drafts, and I'm kind of going to break it down at the beginning of this show, so everyone's already heard that. But I do hate that they're off shelf so quickly, right? So, like, you make this big prediction of this happening and that happening, and then 2 days later, it's like, nah, they're never going to do that. You know what I mean? I hate that part of making the mock drafts. So
yeah, it's wild this time of year, like you said, the information changes over so quickly, and like there are also so many unknowns to this puzzle, not just with the prospects themselves, but also with like the, you know, the league movement, free agency with the new league year starting in what, just a few weeks here. So there's a lot of unknowns here, so I feel like, yeah, navigating the mock draft waters at this stage is tough, but respect to you for already getting one out there, though.
Yeah. I mean, it's and I always am like, oh no, they wouldn't make this pick. This is a stupid pick, and they're all dumb picks, you know, 2 months before the draft even happened. So, but I want to go over and kind of get the groundwork ready for this draft class. So I'm going to do that with you here, and let's start at quarterbacks. And let's start at the very top. Should Burrow, John, be the number one overall pick? And do you like him as a Bengal moving forward?
It's tough. You know, I think that it all makes sense for Burrow to be the number one. I mean, he's coming off one of like the most historically great statistical seasons that we've ever seen in college football. He seems like, you know, he's got the right frame. The arm strength, not elite, but certainly good enough to at least stick in the NFL. It's better than, like, you know, Trubisky's or something like that. So you don't have to worry about him kind of having a rag arm or anything like that. You do have to wonder what the ceiling looks like for him, just because it felt like everything was so easy for him this past year, not only because the system at LSU that Joe Brady kind of helped orchestrate, but also, I mean, having the ridiculous talent advantage, Ja'Marr Chase, Justin Jefferson, the list goes on as far as the weapons that he had. Obviously, Clyde Edwards-Helaire out of the backfield, Thaddeus Moss. So everything was pretty easy for him. And also, I mean, listeners, I'm sure, are already familiar with this, but like, Joe Burrow is older than Lamar Jackson. Like, yeah. He was, you know, playing at age 23 in college. That is not just a little bit of a leg up. So while I can admit that the ceiling for Joe Burrow looks pretty good, I mean, what the top end result for him looks like is solid. I just wonder how much better he can possibly get physically. I think that cerebrally, he's going to be able to understand the game very well. Obviously, like a coach's son, a guy who spent, you know, basically all of his time in Baton Rouge at the football facility because he already had his degree and everything like that. I have some questions about like how much better he's going to get, I think is the bottom line there, but everything points to him being that number one guy, being the number one pick. I think the Bengals, I know they've been catching a lot of bad PR, a lot of flack, sort of out of nowhere, it felt like, but I mean, it is all pretty well reasoned in terms of how they run that franchise, not really looking like anything else or any other team in the league. It sort of operates like a mom and pop shop almost, while everyone else way more on the cutting edge, it feels like. But at the same time, they would be crazy to not go with Burrow. And I don't know if it's really, really in Burrow's nature to pull that Eli Manning. I know there's the famous leverage quote from earlier this week, but I felt like that got a little bit overblown.
It's off-season, in my opinion. Stuff, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's kind of what I thought too, is, you know, the off-season chatter. I swear, some of this stuff is like, I would rather trust a Russian spy more than I would trust some of these NFL teams with the information that's going out there. You know, the Lions want Tua, or is that a ploy to get the Dolphins to trade up for Tua? And now the Dolphins are saying that they kind of like Herbert. But is that a ploy to get, you know, a team to move up or whatever? It's all strange, and there's a lot of smoke screens and stuff going on. What about those next two guys? Do you think Tua is going to Detroit or Miami? And is Herbert just too much of a lock to go to the Chargers? Seems like he would fit right in there.
Yeah, I think Tua is going to end up as the number two quarterback off the board, whether Miami moves up to go ahead and get him, or and you know, if Detroit can pull that off, I think bully for them. I don't think that they should take two. I think that they still have something in Matt Stafford.
Stafford was great last year until he got hurt.
Exactly, and he's been a tough guy for the vast majority of his career. So is that the beginning of the downside of his career? Hard to say. But you know, if the Lions can make a move where they have the Dolphins convinced enough that they're interested in a quarterback, and they can swap picks 3 and 5 there and still end up with Okuda, that would be an amazing play by the Lions. But I do think that Tua is deserving of being the number two quarterback at the very least here. And I don't see him falling outside the top five. And I kind of wanted to ask you a question here about these quarterbacks. In years past where we've had loaded quarterback classes, like I'm thinking of the 2018 class with Sam Darnold and Josh Rosen, Baker Mayfield, Josh Allen, it felt like at this stage of that particular draft process, everyone was kind of nitpicking, like they were already under the microscope, and it doesn't feel like the scrutiny in terms of the holes in these guys' respective games, whether it's Tua, you know, his game isn't getting picked apart as nearly as much as like the medical concerns, and it doesn't feel like anyone is saying anything bad about Joe Burrow. And Herbert gets a little bit of the scrutiny there. But what do you make of just like the national narratives not really being very harsh in terms of its critical eye to this point?
That's a great observation that you've made there, 100%. And I think that the reason is because we really didn't know what the Browns were going to do at one overall in that draft. And so I think it was a back and forth like, oh, who should the Browns take between these four quarterbacks, really five. I was always throwing Lamar Jackson in there, and I know you were too. So, you know, it's you start to get the nitpickiness because you want to see who really the best of the five is. I don't think we really have that this year. I think if Tua was healthy, there would be an argument and nitpickiness between Burrow and Tua, and we'd hear a lot about Burrow's previous seasons at Ohio State and his junior year at LSU, where he just wasn't really that good. And we saw it turn around wholly and completely. I heard Mel Kiper and Todd McShay talking about how they've never seen a single season turnaround at the quarterback position like Joe Burrow has had, from going, he was good, but he wasn't a number one overall pick candidate. He wasn't a Heisman candidate, really. And how he just turned it all around this year. And coming off that performance, it's just hard to say that he's not the number one pick. So I think it's difficult there. And I think Tua's injury and really not having that buzz for any other quarterback going into this season. Herbert was there a little bit, but his year was so bad, I think we all kind of assumed he was going to start. Mocks were going to put him in the middle of the first round and things like that. So, I think that it's because of the lack of top end quarterbacks that we have here. And we kind of know the order that they're going to go in, or we think we know. It's still February, of course, but I think we know. Do you follow me on that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that sums it up really well. Like you said, back 2 years ago, there were like five legitimate possibilities. This time it's like one, maybe one and a half if you're particularly optimistic on Tua, that sort of thing. So yeah, it there's less of a need to have it parsed out to like the very granular level at this point of February like it was a couple years back.
Now, are you on the Jordan Love hype train? Because I'm not. I'm not saying that I can't get on the hype train, but I'm definitely not going to be the conductor of this one. I've seen him compared to Patrick Mahomes a bunch. I do think that his tape is going to leave a little bit, it's going to leave you wanting a little bit more. The physical traits are definitely there, but it's tough. He had a new head coach at Utah State last year too. So in my mock, I didn't put him in the first round. He'll probably go in the first round. I also did no trades in mine. So he'll probably end up going in the first round just because he's kind of the fourth best quarterback on the board in terms of what most people's opinions are right now. So are you on this hype train, and do you think he'll go in the first?
I'm more aligned with you on this one. I think coming into the year, I thought that he was very possible to be that second quarterback off the board. I mean, no one saw Burrow coming. No one really saw Burrow as even like a first round type of guy. And Love had such a strong 2018 season at Utah State that you figured, those tools with another year in college, it's just going to shine even more in 2019. And it was really the opposite. I mean, throwing, I believe, just one more touchdown than interceptions this year. Like you said, the new coaching staff, the big turnover as far as his receivers were concerned, all of that certainly didn't help things. But I think if Love really was as good as we were thinking he was, then he would have overcome some of those things. So I think in the end, what you see with Jordan Love right now is a very raw, unfinished product that does have some intriguing tools. But I mean, Mahomes was a lot more polished than him coming out. So maybe someone can talk themselves into Jordan Love. But, if I'm a team in need of a quarterback, I hope it's not my squad that is the one that pulls the trigger there.
Yeah. I mean, if he could fall to, I'm a Steelers fan. If he could fall to Pittsburgh and sit a year behind Ben, I would love that situation, but I wouldn't love him for, a situation where they absolutely need to get a QB in this year. So, I'm with you on that. Now, I know you're working on quarterbacks right now, right?
I sure am.
And you have, what do you have coming out, ranking soon?
Yes, I got some, yeah, sure, the college fantasy season in 2020, those quarterback rankings, those will be out, I believe, sometime next week. I'll do part one, that'll be quarterbacks 25 through 11, and then 10 through 1 in another installment.
So you're working on college fantasy rankings.
That is correct.
Oh, man. It's early. It's early. Give me a break. Let me catch up here.
I know. It's yeah, I just kind of started it this week, and it, yeah, I forget, you know, every year how big of a undertaking it all ends up being. But yeah, might as well for me started early.
I got to get through baseball stuff first, of course, and then I'll be writing stuff up for the Black Book, the rookies, and all that good stuff coming up again for Joe's book. But when you're digging into these quarterbacks for this draft class, is there anyone else that you like here? I mean, we've got some decent names. I kind of like Fromm's. I know Hurts is getting he's getting the big negative push. I think if anyone's getting a negative push, it's Jalen Hurts right now.
Yeah, the fact that he had to, you know, come out and say that he wasn't going to work out in any, at any other position, that always sends like a bad smoke signal that, you know, NFL teams are obviously giving him some intel that they don't love him as a quarterback, that sort of thing, which I think Jalen Hurts is a quarterback. I think he, you know, the athleticism certainly helps what he can do. But you know, I think it'd be crazy for him to like be pigeonholed and have to try out any other position. I think you got to at least start with him trying to make it at quarterback. As far as those other guys outside of the big four, I think Fromm would be my guy. I think the tools obviously lag behind a guy like Jacob Eason. I think it's a little bit easier to talk yourself into Eason's physical tools, but you know, he
sucks. I'm sorry.
Thank you.
He's not good. He wasn't good at Washington. He got usurped by Jake Fromm at Georgia. So why would we think that he's going to go into the NFL and become much better? Now, look, he's still developing. If he sits for, you know, a couple or three seasons, something like that, I could see him absolutely being an NFL contributor. But I just, like, his product in college wasn't that good. So I don't know why, just based on physical traits, we'd be putting him up there, right?
No, I think, you know, he's basically like a poor man's Jeff George or something. Like, he's got a great arm, great, you know, looks good getting off the bus and everything. But, you know, once it's actually in the game, very, very erratic with the accuracy, and really, really struggled against pressure, like whenever he's hurried. And, you know, that can be, you know, something that's explained away a little bit when you're a true freshman starting. But when that problem carried over a few years later to his senior year at Washington and it didn't get any better, I think that's a red flag that he doesn't process quickly enough. And that's only going to get magnified even more at the NFL level. So I think that, yeah, he's a buyer beware for sure. A little bit interested in Anthony Gordon. I think that Gardner Minshew did a lot for the Mike Leach quarterbacks at the NFL level. So maybe, you know, he can at least make a team and, you know, be a serviceable backup. I'm not projecting him to even have a year like Gardner Minshew did or anything like that. But I think that there are a couple things there in play with Gordon that I think in the later rounds a team could talk themselves into.
I like Perkins a little bit too. Bryce Perkins from Virginia.
Nice.
So
love that.
I don't know that he's going to... I don't think that he's going to sit here and be a NFL starter, but I don't think a Tyrod Taylor-esque career could be out of the options for Perkins. I think he's better throwing the ball than people give him credit for, and he's got tons of athleticism. So I'm all about Bryce Perkins. I think he'll get drafted late and serve as a backup for a team for a while. Now, let's go over to running backs, Johnny, and there's... you know, this class looked real good coming in. Then Chuba came back. Najee came back. So it's a little bit lighter than we thought it was going to be coming in. But there's a clear top three. And it's DeAndre Swift from Georgia, who I'm guessing, because you're a Georgia grad, you're going to be picking him. J.K. Dobbins and Jonathan Taylor. How would you order those top three there?
I think as it stands today, I would go Jonathan Taylor, DeAndre Swift, and Dobbins third. I think they're all going to be, you know, productive starters at the next level. I think I would take all of them ahead of where I would have taken Josh Jacobs a year ago, just to kind of give you a baseline of you know, what I think of these guys overall. I love all three of them. They all are very different types of backs, but I think all of them have a lot of upside. I think with Taylor, you're talking about 3 years of incredible production, incredible volume, and still being able to hold up to that level of workload. And, you know, some people would worry about the wheels falling off a little bit sooner in his career. But I mean, people are already having that happen, like, but with way less carries at the college level by the time that their second contract rolls around anyway. So it's like, just get the use out of him in his rookie deal, that sort of thing. And he's not a natural pass catcher, but, and he does have some fumbling issues, but I think as a pure runner, he's pretty infallible. I think when you're talking about Swift, a guy who never really took on that heavy workload, did have some injury concerns at Georgia, but has that complete skill set that you look for at the next level, really, really natural pass catcher. So Swift also has a very like innate vision where he's able to kind of be patient, wait for his blocks to set up and pick the right lane. And he has the burst to get through there. But, you know, he also has the athletic tools to where if the blocking isn't exactly set up in an ideal way, he has the burst to get to the edge, create a play on his own. And once he gets to the open field, he's got a toolbox of moves that is really, really impressive. So there's a lot to like about his game. You just hope that he can stay healthy. So the durability, I think, is what bumps him to number two for me. And then Dobbins, interesting career. I mean, was really, really explosive. Had a couple really solid seasons. His sophomore year, kind of a down year, kind of got outshined by Mike Weber a little bit, but really came on strong as a junior. Obviously rushed for over 2,000 yards for Ohio State, did it against really good defenses, lit up a lot of really good defenses. I don't think he's a very natural pass catcher, even though the numbers kind of suggest that he is a good pass catcher. I mean, if you look at his junior year specifically, but then if you watch the tape, the hands can be a little bit shaky at times. So Dobbins third for me, but I still like him a fair bit. I think that he's, you know, going to be a top 40-ish pick, a guy that will see an immediate role as a rookie. So I do like all three of those guys, but my order would be Taylor, Swift, then Dobbins.
Taylor Swift. I like
That's
it.
That's right.
Taylor Swift and then Dobbins. I love all three of these guys, man. I was my buddy's an Ohio State fan, and we were texting back and forth during their last game, and Dobbins, I think he took a screen pass all the way to the house, and I was like, dude, I think I could probably get it done to just J.K. Dobbins highlights. Like, that guy is a lot of fun to watch, and Taylor has just been carving him up for so long, and like the only issue you see with him is the fumble issue, and it drives some coaches crazy. Like, I hope the Steelers don't draft him, because Mike Tomlin gets vindictive if you fumble. You're going to the bench, you know, stuff like that. So, but all three of these guys, I'm with you, going to be highly productive at the next level. Now, we thought we knew kind of what was going to be in the second group with Chuba and Najee and the rest of the guys, but Clyde Edwards-Helaire got a big boost at the end of the year. Zach Moss is good, but he has some durability stuff. Cam Akers was running behind a rough line, and guys like Eno Benjamin, you know, had a better junior year or a better sophomore year than junior year. So who are the next three? And they don't necessarily have to be any of those names. Who are the next three that you like in this draft class?
Yeah, I think it starts with you know, the gap after that first tier. And then I think you probably go with Zach Moss. Again, like you said, the knee is going to be a concern. So that's going to be the big thing that he needs to, get greenlit at the combine. So as long as that all checks out, I think that things set up pretty well for him. I think he's a very complete back. I don't think there's anything that really, really wows you. But I mean, he's a guy that averaged over 6 yards a carry in the Pac-12 for Utah. Impressive guy in terms of his pass catching ability, in addition to his rushing. So I like Moss as RB4. After that, I think that we're going to need the combine to kind of settle some of this, because there are a lot of dudes in that range there. But I think Cam Akers is probably next for me. I think that he never quite lived up to that recruiting hype that he had coming into Florida State, where he was, the number one running back in his class, and supposed to just be the, better than Dalvin Cook, that sort of thing. It never really took off, and obviously the offensive line had a lot to do with that. But if Akers tests well, I think that he can get back into the good graces and maybe find himself going in the second round. Had a really good junior year, better pass catching than I thought as well. And then I think Anthony McFarland is someone to keep an eye on out of Maryland. Didn't have as good of a year this past year as he did in 2018, but I mean, the dude has a ton of juice to him. I think that, you know, he could be like a poor man's Darrell Henderson, as far, and I know that, that Henderson didn't quite have the rookie year that a lot of people were expecting.
No, but if you watch him in Memphis, you know what a compliment that is.
Exactly. The really explosive ability to get to the edge, like the total home run hitter type of skill set there. So if McFarland checks those boxes the way I think he will at the combine, then I think that he enters that day two discussion as well.
You and Kuiper, you Marylanders. You know,
that's right.
always got to pull for your guys. Hey, look, you know, I'm I have weird allegiances. I'm originally from Houston. My dad's whole side of the family from Pittsburgh. And then we moved to Arizona when my parents got divorced, my mom and I. So I like the Steelers and the Longhorns. So I just remember McFarland tearing up the Longhorns. So he's got absolute juice. You're right about that. Is there anyone else so far? And I know, like you said, the combine is going to suss a lot of this out, but there's a lot of high-end producers still in this draft class, even though it's not, you know, as big as we thought it was going to be at running back. Is there anyone else so far that you like in the process?
I'm interested to see what AJ Dillon ends up looking like, because I mean, the optics right there of a guy who's like 6 foot, you know, almost 250 pounds, is like, how is he going to be able to run even like a 4.6 40? But I mean, there are reports from, you know, from the past there where he's running sub 4.5. And if that's the case,
no way.
I mean, that's like a legitimate bullet, like trying to tackle an actual bowling ball.
That's Derrick Henry again. You know,
see,
he's not as
exactly.
tall, but come on.
In terms of the BMI, it'd be very, very similar. So he's going to be really interesting at the combine. I like Clyde Edwards-Hilaire, but I can't talk myself into him the way that others have. But I think that he's a guy that if you give him snaps, he's going to give you productive snaps. He can get some yardage. He's tough to bring down because, you know, he's got that low center of gravity. He's also a pretty polished pass catcher, but I don't necessarily expect him to, like, blow it up at the combine. And then I'm also interested to see what Keyshawn Vaughn can do. Right now, he's probably only like a fifth or sixth round candidate. But if he runs as well as I think he can, then he maybe enters like the early day three, late day two discussion.
Yeah. And a lot of these guys are going to end up, you know, as far as their fantasy value is going to wind up mattering where they land. I mean, that's for everybody, but specifically, like you said, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, he needs a place where he can go and catch passes. You know, same thing for like J.J. Taylor and Reggie Corbin and those guys. So I'm with you. There's a lot in this class to like, but it's kind of a mess right now. And I think you're right that the combine is going to separate a lot of it. The wide receiver class is incredible. I mean, there's no other way to kind of talk about it. It's just unbelievably deep this year, and I feel like we can say that a lot of years, but I really, really like this class that we have. So just to start out, John, Judy or Lamb?
I'm a Lamb guy, and yeah, first of all, agreed that I mean, last year's class was ridiculous, and then I think, you know, like the best since 2014, like the Odell class and all that. I think that this one, the depth is even better. I mean, we saw a record for combine invites at the receiver position this year, and with good reason. There are so many like top end type of receivers here. I know Mel Kiper caught some heat the other day for saying that like 40 receivers could be taken in the first three rounds or something crazy like that. But I mean, I don't think that like seeing 20, 25, 30 receivers drafted is out of the question whatsoever. But back to the Lamb versus Judy debate, I don't think you can go wrong, but I do think that Lamb has a bit of a higher ceiling there. Judy, he might run the better 40, but I think Lamb has the better deep threat capability. Even despite that, I think that he has like a natural knack for getting open. Judy, very good at route running as well. Judy kind of reminds me of like Calvin Ridley with like a little bit more speed to him. And then Lamb, I think, is just I have a hard time coming up with an exact comp for him. But man, like the explosiveness, the natural ability is just ridiculous. So I don't think you can go wrong with either. But I would say that Lamb has the more convincing look of that true wide receiver one at the next level.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're both really, really good. I'm a Judy guy over Lamb. I love the route running from Judy. He's just unbelievable. He's so good. But Lamb really proved himself. I think coming into this year was kind of Judy and, you know, whoever else. I think a lot of people were on LaVisca. I know I love LaVisca, but, you know, T. Higgins had a big crowd around him too, but it was kind of Judy, LaVisca, Higgins, and then we'll see. But CeeDee Lamb was so great at Oklahoma this year, and that is a Longhorn fan complimenting a Sooner. So, you know, I believe it. You know, Hollywood was so good last year, too, and I think Lamb is much better than Hollywood. So he's going to be great. How would you order and it's hard to put three in here, so I'm just going to take my three and see. It seems like these are the next three to me, and if you have anyone else in this tier, please throw them in. So after Judy and Lamb, I've got a tier of, like, Chenault, Higgins, and Ruggs. So how would you order those three guys, and is there anyone else that belongs in there with them?
I would go Higgins, first of all. I've liked his game since he was a freshman. He's a big receiver, but I think he's got better movement skills than say, like, a Mike Williams, another, like, big receiver out of Clemson. I think that he's got better straight line speed than Williams did. I don't know if he can quite dominate the high point quite the same way. But he's a natural hands catcher. He's got really, really good route running for a guy his size. Really, really crisp out of his breaks and everything, especially, again, for a guy who's, you know, pushing 6'4". So he's a bully out there, and he's really, really smooth athlete. So I like him a lot. I think that he will have a fairly easy transition to the NFL. Ruggs would be number two from this tier. I mean, the speed, I'm sure the odds on him being the fastest 40 at the combine are, you know, he's got to be the heavy favorite. And, you know, it makes sense. You watch the tape and it's like he's operating at a completely different level from everybody else. Just get him the ball and you know, he's gone. I don't know if he's super polished as a route runner or anything like that, but sometimes you don't necessarily need that when your speed is that much.
When you can snap off a route and break someone's ankle, it doesn't really matter, right?
Exactly. So I do love just the speed element for Ruggs, and, you know, maybe the rest of it will come with it, but maybe he can be like a better Santana Moss or something when it's all said and done. And then Chenault, you know, I might have put him number one here, based off of the 2018 film, but, you know, this year, in on a per target basis, it wasn't that much worse, actually. It was pretty consistent with what it was a year ago, but it didn't feel like he quite had the same burst this year. I think that maybe some flaws in his game showed up a little bit. I think his best case scenario, because of his build, where he's not the tallest guy, but he's kind of built like a running back almost, and he operates like a running back when he has the ball. Reminds me a little bit of AJ Brown, but I think Brown had a little bit more going for him, a little bit more of a complete game coming out there. So we'll see what happens with Chenault at the combine. But right now, I'm like a tiny bit skeptical. And then I guess the other guy I would put in the conversation here, and he's a very polarizing guy, with good reason, is Jalen Reagor, because out of TCU, because you can see the bad in his tape, and like you have to almost like preface any praise of him by like, it's like, okay, I get it, like he drops a lot of passes,
and the
numbers from this year, not good, but I think that a lot of that can be attributed to the, you know, kind of crappy quarterback play that they had at TCU these last couple of years. But
it's so bad. It's been unbelievably bad, the quarterback play for Reagor, and you're right, he does drop some, but when you're only getting, you know, four or five opportunities a game, and then you drop one, it's like, oh god, well, there goes 30% of my productivity because the QB has been bad. So I think you put him with an NFL quarterback, he's gonna shine. I am absolutely on team Reagor. So
okay, excellent. Yeah, I think he's good. You know, you're a Big 12 guy, you saw him up close a few times. I think that there's a lot to like about his game. I think he can do it all.
I was at that Cheez-It Bowl, by the way, where he only scored between
the internet's
TCU
favorite
and Cal.
Bowl game ever.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I was at that game, and I was like, I came here to watch Jalen Reagor, and I saw 9 interceptions. So,
oh my lord,
it was so terrible.
that's so cool. You went. That's like an amazing. Like, what's the best game you ever went to? The Cheez-It Bowl.
It's funny because, you know, I'm sitting there. And I'm like, he's not going to throw that ball. He's not going to throw that ball across his body like that. That's you know that in Pop Warner. I'm like, yep, he's throwing it. And there we go. It's going the other way. And it was like that so many times. I mean, there are a couple picks, I think, called back because of flags. So, I mean, it was one of the ugliest games. So I'm glad you're on the Jalen Reagor tip, because I'm definitely a big fan of Jalen Reagor. I put him in the first round of my mock too. I had him going to the Packers. So
there we go. Love it.
I think him and Aaron Rodgers would make an amazing team. So, what about anyone else in this class? It's so deep, so you don't have to list all of them. But who are a couple that pre-combine are sticking out to you? And we won't hold it against you if they totally tank the combine and suck.
Right. Of course, very, very important caveat there. I like Brandon Ayuk a lot out of Arizona State. I know that he was a JUCO guy to start things out, but I think he had a really, really strong year this past year. There's a lot to like in his game. He can get downfield. He can make plays, good hands, all that stuff. So I think as long as the athleticism translates in Indy, it should be a day two selection for him. I like Devin Duvernay, Texas guy. I think I like him better than Colin Johnson. I think that there's, there's room for him as a pretty dominant slot receiver at the next level. He's really well built. He's got track speed, really good hands, caught like a ridiculous percentage of his targets this past year. So love Duvernay. I think that he's going to make a name for himself there. Antonio Gandy-Golden and Michael Pittman, two of the bigger receivers in this class. I think both of them are like pushing 6'4", legitimately. Gandy-Golden coming from Liberty, so that there's going to be that small school knock on him, but I think that he's a legit talent. And Pittman, a bit of a late breakout for him, you know, being a true senior when he really, really broke out, but really impressive year from him at USC, despite some turmoil going on around him. So those are like that next group of guys that I'm intrigued by that I think are very, very deserving of like day two consideration.
Yeah, I'm with you on Duvernay. Like Colin Johnson is a better all-around wide receiver. I don't think that's really debatable, but he can't stay on the field. So
that's true.
You know, you can't stay on the field, doesn't really matter. And that's, you know, what a lot of podcasts and over at TDN, they always say availability is the best ability. You know what I mean? You got to be ready to play. So, and I don't know. I'm hoping that it was, look, I'm not going to get myself really hurt in college because I need to make money in the pros. I'm hoping that that's what his kind of thought process at Texas was, because otherwise, you know, he's going to be the next Lima Swede, and nobody wants that.
Nope.
Of course.
Especially for your Steelers.
Yeah, yeah. It's, well, yeah, I don't think they'll be taking him. But we'll see. I mean, I could be wrong. Tomlin does like Texas. He does like Texas players a lot. And there was even a rumor for a while that Tomlin was going to leave the Steelers to go to Texas. And he was like, why would I do that?
It's like,
no disrespect to Texas, but I'm coaching one of the 32 NFL teams. So I don't think I would take a step back even for more money. But yeah, I'm with you. I mean, I like guys in this class. I love Justin Jefferson out of LSU. Just his size is great, and his arm length is great. Tyler Johnson, going to be a lot of fun to watch at the next level. And I think a couple of these guys like Denzel Mims and Donovan Peoples-Jones, Bryan Edwards suffered from some bad QB play. So I think they can make bigger names for themselves in the NFL than they had in college. So I like a couple of those guys too. But AGG, one of my absolute favorites. I'm with you on Antonio Gandy-Golden. Not a lot of tight ends in this class that are fantastic. I think there's a lot of third, fourth round talent here, which is not bad. I mean, look, Mark Andrews went in the third round, if I'm remembering correctly. So there's some decent talent at tight end here. But no, there's no Noah Fant. You know, there's no TJ Hawkinson's in this class. So who do you like out of this tight end class?
I think that it's not very flashy, but I do like Cole Kmet. He kind of reminds me of late stage Gronk, where, like, you know, he's not going to burn past you or anything, but he's bigger than you, and he's probably going to catch the ball if it's near him. So I think that there's enough of that to Komet's game. Kind of a blocky, not a fluid athlete, but I think a guy who does kind of take naturally to that position, and I don't think that there's any concerns about his blocking, so that'll help him get on the field, and I think he's got good enough hands there. So I do like Kmet as like a solid tight end at the next level. Both the Bryants, both Hunter and Harrison, interesting guys. Hunter Bryant, really electric freshman year until he hurt his knee. I hope that the medicals clear him and everything like that. But he did have he did play 12 games, a full season at Washington this past year. So that helps quell some of that. And he was over 10 yards a target for Jacob Eason even. So like that's pretty impressive to have that kind of success with him. So I like him a fair bit. Harrison Bryant, really productive guy for a long time at FAU. Haven't watched a ton of Troutman out of Dayton yet, but I mean, he's a guy that a lot of people in the know seem to like. So yeah, he obviously crushed it at the Senior Bowl. Looks like he belongs. So those are kind of like the four that I'm paying the closest attention to right now.
Yeah, I like Jared Pinkney too, to piggyback on that. You would think that, you know, Stanford has always had decent tight ends. Maybe Colby Parkinson could put up some decent numbers. Another guy that suffered from some pretty rough quarterback play after why can't I think of his name? Costello got hurt.
Costello, yeah.
Yeah, and then transferred, obviously. He's going to be fun to watch with Mike Leach this year. But that's all I got for you, man. I appreciate you taking the time to answer some questions, and excited about moving forward in this and getting the combine here pretty soon. You know, I mean, I'll still watch it. I always rag on the combine for being the underwear Olympics, but like, I don't know. You know, so many people made the biggest deal out of DK Metcalf's three-cone drill last year. Remember that?
Oh, man.
And then
of course
he goes on to knock the Eagles out of the playoffs basically by himself. He was incredible in that game. So it's a little overblown, but I think we're going to get a lot of separation in wide receivers and probably some separation at tight end this year from the combine. So it's
tight end one is there for the taking.
Absolutely. Anybody could take it here. It just depends on what team decides they need a tight end first. It sucks for the Patriots because they really need a tight end, but they need to go spend on Hooper, right? So
yeah, that's okay. It's okay. Maybe they can just take a few years off. That's fine.
That's also fine. Like you were mentioning Duvernay, I would love to see him playing the slot for Tom Brady. I think his fantasy value would go through the roof.
Oh, man, yes. That.
So, but where can we catch you? I already gave out the Twitter, but give it again and tell everybody where they can find all of your work.
All right. So you can follow me on Twitter at John's Tailgate. That's John's _ Tailgate. You can catch all my college football content, rankings, all that good stuff over on rotowire.com. Put out an NFL podcast. We're doing them weekly right now, just once a week on Thursdays. So those drop. You can catch those anywhere as well. So plenty of places to find my work.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate it, and we will talk to you again very soon.
Anytime, man. I love coming on. Thanks again.
We had a couple technical issues. Apologize for that. I screwed up when I uploaded this, and John and I had some too, so this episode was being a little bit difficult. But remember, you can follow me on the Twitter at Bogman Sports and John at John's _ Tailgate. And I will see you guys next week. Take it easy, everybody.